Welcome to Outspoken, where we dive deep into the topics and intersection of technology, money, business, and passion. I'm your host, Shayna Cosgrove.
There's a huge charitable arm to our family, so we feel like we got a great life in the United States, so give back to those who are trying to make their own way too. Don't be afraid to fail and try something completely different, because you really got to push yourself beyond your comfort zone and try something new, because you never know that whatever you try, it may be like the best thing that ever happened that you never thought about. Talk to anybody and don't be afraid to really put yourself out there. I think those are the biggest things, especially I think as women, as girls, we're not taught to push ourselves so publicly out there, you know, and I think that's a lot that has to be changed. I think if we could all do that, it'd be a better place.
All right, well, it is a very cold Friday morning, the Friday morning before winter break for all of those of us who have children, and most of us who are working are probably kind of going to be MIA for the next 2 weeks. But Alexis Kowalczyk, did I say that right?
You did.
Say it one more time for all of us who probably have to practice it when talking to you anyway.
Sure. It's Alexis Kowalczyk.
Well, being a Shayna, I grew up very comfortable correcting people on how to pronounce my name. So there's no shame in educating everyone about how to say your name properly. Alexis Kowalczyk.
Agreed.
So tell us where you are today.
I am in my house. I am in a basement hallway, which is where all the action happens. Behind me is the elementary school where my two kids are working, hopefully.
Do they get out early today too?
No, we just came off of two snow days. And so, you know, who knew that when you're distance learning, you still get snow days.
I know. And your kids have been home since March, right?
Yeah, they've been home since March. You know, I have one child who's special needs and the other child who has an autoimmune disease. So we've been pretty locked down since the beginning.
And is your husband working at home as well?
He is working from home as well. He is in the newly remodeled guest room / office.
Oh, so he has a door.
He has a door.
Whoa. Did you guys arm wrestle over that? How did you pick your spot?
I don't generally have like a whole lot of papers on my desk, and he is a software architect. So he's got like multiple screens and wires, and
yeah,
I just don't want to see that. So he automatically got the door.
My husband, we got the largest IKEA desk possible because his method is all the papers on all the desk. And he used to do it on my dining room table, which made me insane. I have a strong policy that nothing's allowed on the tables because the tables are for eating.
I am with you 100%. At the beginning, my husband was on the dining room table, which was another reason why the office / guest room was given to him. We figured we're not having any guests anytime soon. No need to keep the beds there.
And you, what state are you in?
I'm in Virginia.
Where in Virginia?
Loudoun County.
Nice. One of the hubs of the internet. One of the official hubs of the internet right by Dulles Airport.
Correct. I'm not that far from that and data center land. So
yeah.
It's like a theme park, but not.
So tell me what your professional role is. We know you're a mom and you got two kids, two young kids. What is your full-time job?
So my full-time job is I am a senior account executive at General Dynamics for our Intel community account. So
what does that actually mean? I have no idea. Like when you grew up, did you know you were going to be a senior account executive? Did you know other senior account executives?
I had no idea what this was.
You know what it is now.
Now I know what it is. But before I would have been like, sounds good. So I manage the accounts and the relationships between General Dynamics and one of our Intel customers.
Just one, or you're focused across several?
At the moment, we're doing one. I've had more than one before. So it's, you know, we're kind of always in a mood of change at General Dynamics. So I think what we really do is try to take like one customer specialty and then see what you can do, you know, for other agencies as well, across the board. It's really more of a building relationships, kind of taking what works here may work there, or there may be a really good idea that your team's working on or doing that could make a difference for somebody else. So it's really kind of bridging a lot of those things.
Now, can you give us a plug for General Dynamics right now? What is their core specialty and services? What are they really exceptional and known for?
With my customer, I would say cybersecurity at the moment. That's really a big topic. Enterprise IT, cloud, and emerging technologies. So
all the high tech work.
All the high tech work, you know, basically in nuts to bolts. You know, we're a big infrastructure provider as well at scale.
What does that mean, infrastructure provider? That means you're competing with Amazon and Microsoft for their cloud-based architecture as well?
Well, we're a service integrator, so we're not necessarily competing them. We're vendor agnostic. Our teams are able to work with any of their technology sets.
Does the JEDI Award have a big impact on your customer, or are you pretty absent and distanced from the JEDI Award?
I think for me personally, I'm a little absent and distanced from the JEDI Award just because the agency that I support, I think, is still trying to figure their way with that award, what they choose to use, what they choose to put in the cloud or not. There's a couple different vendors.
And do they have their own homegrown cloud?
They do.
Well, there's such a variety, right? And I saw another IC agency just awarded it to basically any commercial company that had a cloud. Oracle has its own cloud, right? I guess if you're focused on business platforms, business intelligence platforms, and you need that transaction to be guaranteed, Google has its own cloud, Amazon.
I mean, everybody's got a cloud these days.
IBM has a cloud too. Someone's going to write me after and tell me I missed there. So I apologize. And then these agencies have their own homegrown versions too.
Right. And then there's, you know, hybrid versions of cloud. So, I mean, literally, as a large service integrator, I think it is best practices to look to see what everybody else is doing, understand where, you know, vendors and your customer are going, and then, you know, really seeing kind of where you fit in and how this applies to the work that you're doing and how you can make it easier for them.
How long have you been in this role?
I've been in this role now for about a little over 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. I've kind of bounced around a little bit, not within the industry, but around General Dynamics. I originally started off as a contracts manager, and I was really great at building relationships and understanding the business side of the work. So General Dynamics said, hey, try this out.
Well, that's, if we're going to stereotype, contracts managers are people who love everything to be very accurate. Is that, well, that type of contract management where all the paperwork is done correctly?
Yeah, the fine print.
Everything's filed properly, right? All those exact words.
Totally.
I have become like Michael Scott and Dunder Mifflin. You know, as you move into certain roles, other parts of yourself can atrophy. So even though I appreciate contracts managers, I'm like, whatever, just take care of the details. So you must have been an extremely outgoing contracts manager.
I mean, in the sea of introverts, I definitely stood out. But I think what was fascinating to me about contracts, it's not so much the details of the paperwork, which is clearly like a big part of the job, but it's really buying trends, how people buy, what they buy, how things come from an idea into like an actual contract. And, you know, the whole process, to me, that was really more exciting than, you know, the let me process some modification and, you know, the data entry piece of the part. It was really more the customer interaction, and I love to negotiate.
Yeah. I always treat the subcontractor managers very well because, I mean, they're often just telling you facts from like the PM, but, you know, they can make your life easy. They can make your life hard. They can not answer your questions. And then you're spending hours going through a large company's portal, which is often the most painful part of the whole business experiences dealing with these portals. It's not even the contracts. It's like these portals are often supposed to be so easy. That is, you know, I just got an idea for a new software product. I am going to develop a new large business portal to deal with their vendors because these UIs and the way that they're structured and the way that they do it is so painful.
I know, and they're all different. And I think a lot of them are kind of homegrown, you know, slapped together.
Yeah. It's clearly like coming off of some database and then they create some code and then they don't even like have it auto-generated for you. So my favorite contracts are the one where people put in our time and then they just issue us a check. That's my favorite, right? Like all we have to do is make sure the time is correct. But yeah, I always tell other small businesses that are getting started, like it's not the end of the world if you don't get a subcontract to start with, because half the time as a small business owner, you don't even know how to even properly fill out the documentation or what it is. And it's like getting a mortgage every time. It's like a whole series of very complex documents. And then now with like NIST compliance and CMMC compliance and your OCIs, it is quite a world. My father loves contract management with like his whole heart. He loves to read an NDA. TAs is his jam, right? Like I tried to get him to run payroll, not his thing. Contracts management is like my dad's jam.
You know, I totally get it. There's some, you know, quiet peace of mind that happens when you read a contract and you can sit there and think about something. I mean, on some levels, it is kind of nice, but I'm a super extrovert. So it's nice for like all of like 20 minutes. And then I'm like, I got to talk to a person.
But I want to see your pantry because I bet you're highly organized and neat. Like I bet if I came to your house and I wanted to get some chips and salsa, I could find it really easily.
Yeah, you would.
And they'd be fresh. Like they wouldn't be dried out with an open bag. No.
Well, no. I mean, unfortunately, my kids are on the mac and cheese and Terry and nugget diet. So I'm sure my chips are on a very quick rotation while I'm sitting in the basement.
So you are a contracts manager who is now really starting to be interested. What was the next move after that?
I went into business development and, you know, it was a little bit of a, you know, trial by fire, but I'm going to be honest, I kind of took to it very quickly. Out of college, I worked for a lobby firm for a couple of years, and I was really kind of used to working on the Hill, talking to people, getting fundraising dollars. So it just kind of came like really back naturally. And it's just like an opposite side of the process. You know, on one end, you're advocating for your client. And in this case, I'm advocating for my client. It's kind of like full circle.
So what did that job look like? Was it a lot of attending a ton of meetings? Can you describe what business development at a large government contractor looks like?
It is a lot of internal meetings, but it's a lot of external meetings because it's a lot of research. So it's kind of, in my opinion, it's like a three-prong. One is you have your internal customers, which is your company that you have to make happy and talk about opportunities and talk about the customer landscape and really be like a good advocate for the customer internally with what's on their mind, what their priorities are, and, you know, see if you can basically make a match. It's matchmaking at the simplest form. And then on top of that, you have to do research. What are my competitors doing? What are they doing cooler than I am? Or, you know, where are they struggling? Are they struggling in the same places that I'm struggling? Or what's new? And then I kind of take a look at the geopolitical market. Like what's going on in the world today, especially supporting, you know, DOD and Intel, you really have to kind of see where's the future going? Where's the next big wave coming from? Is it coming from cybersecurity? Is it coming... Right.
What were some of the major things that you read to help you with your research? Was there a particular trade journal or Washington Post every day? What was your major go-to for information?
So I do read the Washington Post every day. I do read the New York Times. I read the Guardian. I read BBC News. I'm a news junkie. But then I also like to look at international papers as well. So I speak fluent Czech and Slovak. So
oh, you do?
I do. So I do read the papers at least once a week there to kind of catch up on what's going on. And
how interesting. Now, were you first generation or did you come over?
No, I'm first gen. So
both parents or?
Both.
Wow. So how old were your parents when they came over?
They were probably in their 30s. They were professors.
Oh, how interesting. What kind of professors?
So my dad's theology and my mother was languages.
Wow.
So they left Czechoslovakia and came to Florida. we always had a lot of lectures at the home, which I always think gave me the patience of Job, so I can sit through anything. I feel like my brother and I were test dummies for everything they wanted to talk about.
Now, how old was your mother when she had you then?
She was in her mid to late 30s.
Okay. So. And are you the baby, the oldest?
I'm the oldest. I have a younger brother, but 3 years younger.
So did your parents work your whole childhood?
Yes.
Were they at the office a lot, or was it a lot of working from home as well?
I don't remember them around a whole lot. I had my grandmother would get permission to leave Czechoslovakia. At the time it was communist. She would be able to stay with us for 6 to 8 months. So I remember a lot with her and, you know, other caretakers. You know, my parents are writing books and lecturing. So I just remember lots of books and papers around my house.
Are they still working today?
No, they are retired.
What did they do with themselves for retirement?
Well, I mean, COVID kind of put a kink in their big plans, but they do love to travel. My dad still teaches, I think, comparative faith, a church in Tampa, Florida. He does a lot with the migrant farmer movement and, you know, food banks. So there's a huge charitable arm to our family. So we feel like we got a great life in the United States. So give back to those who are trying to make their own way too.
That's wonderful. And what about your mother?
My mother sits and reads. She's a little bit of an introvert. She reads, she listens to papers, watches Czech TV shows, you know, talks to friends and family. I think for her, COVID's been really rough because, you know, her connection is still, you know, back in Europe.
Now, what was that like to grow up with two professors?
Well, school was really important, and so were the grades. That was a hot topic at the dinner table. But then, you know, my parents were kind of old school in the sense that, like, children should be seen and not heard. So unless my brother and I had something really revelational to bring at the dinner table that could drive the discussion, you know, we were kind of kept quiet for a while. So for me, you know, with my kids, I think the difference is that I really like to play and have fun with them. I think that's the one thing I kind of missed from having my parents being so academic.
They weren't as playful?
No. It was a lot of, what are your thoughts on this? And, you know, a lot of philosophizing.
Yeah. Now, what kind of relationship do you have with your own children?
I think I have more an American relationship with the kids. It's, you know, I really want them to feel comfortable to come to me with any of their problems or issues, talk it out. Not that my parents didn't do that. It was just, you know, it was a very much more formal conversation. Mm-hmm. And I really want to take those barriers down.
Now you're doing BD, and this is just almost a perfect match for you, right? You get to read all the things, talk to all the people.
It's a labor of love because it kind of takes, you know, your skills that you're inherently good at. And then I really like seeing what's the next new. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this last night. As a kid, I wanted to be a fashion designer. Like, what's the latest and greatest? What's the coolest trends? And in a way, I'm kind of doing it minus the fashion part in business because I'm like, oh, where's AI ML going? Where's 5G going? You know, it's like, kind of the same, but not really. So at its simplest form, I feel like, you know, you have to be a little bit of a trend center in business development because the business keeps moving.
So let me ask you a couple of questions related to that. One, you're wearing a very bright yellow top today, and you work for a very large government contractor. What is your fashion style at work? Do you feel comfortable being like your stylish self at work? Do you have to tone it down?
So, I mean, I try to keep it fresh and cool. I love jumpsuits. I've always been a big jumpsuits person.
Really?
I am.
You must not have to go to the bathroom very much. That is my number one. That is why I'm not doing a jumpsuit.
I know, but it looks so cool on and it's so worth it. So I do like those. I love dresses. I'm not so much of a pants person. Never really have been.
Now, what about high heels? Are you running around work in high heels?
No, absolutely not. You know, maybe a kitten heel or a sling back,
What are your go-to shoes for work?
Nike Cortez.
Straight up Cortez. So you can run around.
I like to walk around and, you know, I think there's something sharp about like a really great pair of sneakers with a suit. So, yeah. I mean, I feel like if the guys can get away with it, why not me? So, yeah. But I feel like my stiletto wearing days have long since passed me.
Well, I stopped wearing them when I worked at the NRO because they had those crazy long hallways. You often went up and down the stairs and I felt very restricted in my movements and I couldn't keep up with, you know, say a man or a boss who I was walking into a meeting with and you're like teetering.
I know that feeling. I'm 5'3". So like literally everybody else, you know, my five steps is their one step.
Now, do you switch up your jewelry too, your purses? Or are you like static with anything? Every day, is it a lot of like thought into each outfit?
No, I like backpacks. I guess this is very non-traditional, but I like kind of like—
You're efficient. You're like focused on work. It's like comfort, right?
I want my arms free so I can shake or give a hug. This is all pre-pandemic. I like my arms free. I'm really big on efficiency, I guess. I want to be able to walk and be comfortable. And yeah. I feel like when you're comfortable and not constrained, you can have a lot easier conversation.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
But no, jewelry changes, makeup changes.
Oh, all of it.
Yeah. Everything else. But, you know, I do love a good backpack purse.
Yeah. So like mini bags or just a backpack period?
You know, it changes up. I think right now I've got like a really cute bright orange and hot pink Tory Burch backpack. So
nice. Now, I think I'm a little bit older than you, but one thing that I think that's funny about fashion is the fashion from when I was in middle school is back around. So I remember having like a sweater with a whole bunch of buttons on it in middle school, and Tory Burch has that for sale right now.
They used to be called fanny packs, but belt bags are in big right now.
I love me a fanny pack. I love me a fanny pack because now you wear leggings all the time. And I haven't upgraded to the leggings where you have the side pocket. So I need a fanny pack for, in theory, if I'm working out and going for a run with my big, huge phone. Or like, I call it my mom purse. Like, I'm just running around with a credit card and my cell phone. Let's go back because I don't even know what you did for college. So you are raised in Florida by your grandmother and your professor parents. So where do you go off to college and what do you think is going to happen when you go off to college?
Well, the first thing I wanted to go was to a college where my parents didn't teach at or know anybody at. So that was critical.
Did you have to fight them on that?
No. I mean, they really wanted me to go where I thought I would have the best opportunity to do what I wanted to do. It really was kind of like, where do you fit? I went to University of Alabama, which is completely polar opposite of my background. But my parents were like, you know, this is going to be a different experience and it's good to know different and push yourselves out of your comfort zone because you never know what you miss. So I went to University of Alabama. I was a political science major and a religious studies minor. The two things you're not supposed to talk about at the dinner table, politics and religion.
What religion were you raised in? I meant to ask you that since your dad was a professor of theology. Were you even raised in a religion?
So he was Roman Catholic and my mom's Jewish.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess it's a traditional mix of not the same faith.
What were you raised in one?
I would say predominantly Jewish, but like it was more, you know, they both gave my brother and I a lot of leeway into finding which spirituality we really felt more connected with. There was a very big, like they didn't want to force a faith on us. It was up to us to discover ourselves and figure out where we fit.
So is this time of year like incredibly stressful for you? So not only do you have a full-time job, there was a major hack against the government, right? So you're tracking cybersecurity stuff. The SolarWind hack just occurred.
Yeah.
You have everybody's at home right now. We're hoping the vaccine occurs. And now you do Hanukkah and Christmas at your own house too?
Yeah, today's the last day of Hanukkah. So we'll be done and then we'll move on to Christmas festivities. So basically October on in my house is one nonstop party. So I'm ready for February to start.
Now, but as kind of a typical American mom, all the holiday work falls to you. Is that true in your household? Like, do you have to do all the planning, all the like coordinating with grandparents?
No, I got fired from the family calendar by my husband, who's a whole lot more OCD than I am.
Oh, really? Says mine.
Yeah. So he decorates. I'm in charge of telling him where I would like it in the house.
And who does all the gift ordering?
He does.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
I mean, I throw some stuff on there, but, you know, we've been together for almost 20 years now. So at this point, he's like, I got it. So it's really awesome to have a spouse who, one, gets you, but two, like, supports you and lets you be you.
So you're there at Alabama. Are you a big football fan, too?
I'm a giant sports junkie.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Diehard Bucks fan and big Crimson Tide fan, but I also love soccer and I love tennis and I watch cycling.
Oh, you watch all the things.
I watch everything. Like, I love watching competition and people like really like drive and motivate themselves and basketball, like literally everything in our house. So there's a lot of sports.
How cool. Now, is everyone else as into the sports as you are?
No. My husband is only college football and he follows a couple other sports, but not to my extent. I do fantasy football leagues and everything.
Oh, wow. Is it a mixed gender league? Are you the only woman in your league?
I'm the only woman in my league.
Okay. Okay.
Which is normal for me.
So you love like all the information. You have the news on behind you at all times too?
No, I usually wake up, start reading the news, and then we'll have a couple cups of coffee. And then in the evening, I'll catch up on all the news after everybody goes to sleep. So I love news, what turns, what ticks, and how people think. And yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, we were introduced by my friend Aisha Bowe. How do you know Aisha?
I met her at, it was like an industry event, and we immediately clicked. And I,
well, now I know why. She was probably wearing something fabulous.
She was super fabulous. So I totally fangirl her and what she does for government contracting and how she does lingo. And there's so many things that she does that, you know, make me feel completely inadequate as a person. And I just love that. Here you have this NASA astronaut, you know, engineer who's out there, like not only running her own business, but two businesses and then motivational speaking. Like, what's not?
She does so much for community to give back and to tell her story. She really needs to write a book.
I love her. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of women in this industry. I really feel like, you know, the connections that I have with a lot of these women, I think that's what makes this business so exciting. Is it's nice sometimes to be the only girl in the room, but sometimes, you know, I want to see other people come up with me. And it's nice to kind of have my tribe of people that I can count on and do business with honestly and transparently.
So I had met Aisha a really long time ago, briefly, when she was partners with somebody that I kind of had mixed feelings about, and he went on to evolve something else. I had vaguely known of her, and her BD person had reached out to me and was like, oh, Aisha would like to meet you. So she actually drove all the way up to Baltimore and came to my office that day. Kind of the same thing. You know, I'm always open to meeting with people and allowing some randomness. And I just felt a real connection to her. I understand what it's like that sometimes doors are closed also because you are too, I would say, like, fabulous, and it's intimidating, right? Like, even just, you could have never said anything, but your body language of confidence is threatening to others, right? To even stand there with your shoulders back and your chin up is intimidating or threatening, or to do so much and how she gives back so much is also, I think, sometimes threatening. And so I was like, you know what? I will help you with everything that I know. So I started piling her up with information and sending her info. And so it was almost a trade. Like, she knows one agency and I know another. And so that's how she introduced me to you at GDIT and some of the opportunities that you were talking. Now, you went from BD to account executive. What does that transition look like?
The transition looks fairly the same, except now instead of being very tactical focused on individual opportunities and teaming for them, you're really looking at it from a broader perspective. Okay. And looking at a bigger landscape and saying, you know, where are the synergies? Where are the growth areas? Instead of just kind of being like, I'm working this one effort or these two efforts, I'm now like looking across an agency.
It sounds like it's a absolute perfect fit for your personality.
Yeah, I'm a big picture girl, so.
But it's also a lot of talking to people. I think I'm on the introvert line, so I get pooped out after, like, this is it for me for the day. No one else gets to talk to me after this podcast. But an account executive has to be comfortable being on and being with people kind of all the time, right? You have to get your energy from people.
You do. And then you also need to get, you know, the people you're talking to energy kind of received back, because you want to make sure that they're just as excited as you are and they're just as in as you are as well. And it benefits, you know, the whole circle, really.
Can you tell us something in your career that you would consider one of your major successes or highlights of your career and why?
One of my highlights was recently working 2 years to kind of bring the larger General Dynamics into the more science and technology space, the agency that I support. And we had been kind of known more as an infrastructure service provider. But the company has so much more to offer. General Dynamics is a behemoth. So it was kind of taking up the piece parts of, you know, the company and getting these different silos to kind of work together for a unified effort. And I broke into white space for a $990 million contract. And I thought that was really...
Sorry, say that number again.
$990 million.
Wow. And you won it?
Yes.
Well, that's pretty huge. Nice job. You should see the smile on her face. She's smiling and like humble at the same time. That's amazing.
That's a team effort, but you know,
it's always a team effort, but it takes a lot to stand up, to be the first one to say, this is where we should go, and to push forward for something when people aren't wildly saying yes. It's a lot easier to execute. It's a lot harder to identify something that isn't there. And something that isn't there typically is never agreed upon immediately as soon as you say it to people. So it takes a lot of sticking yourself out there and putting your head out and saying, this is where we got to go. So kudos to you for taking the initiative, having that vision and rallying the troops to get it through. Now, is there a common myth about your field or your work or about government contractors that you want to debunk?
There's a lot of myths and, you know, perspectives on government contractors, you know, but for the most part, I always think of these people as the right hand or left hand of the mission. You know, the government can't really accomplish their jobs without government contractors. And without the government, then the government contractors don't have a job. So you really have to be intertwined. I think the myth that we're all looking out for ourselves and trying to make a giant profit off of the government, or that business development is purely sales-based, I think, you know, that's a little bit inaccurate, because to me, the business development is kind of the gateway to the company. You're the face of the company and you're there to kind of say, you know, what are your needs? You know, what are our needs? How you fit them together and if they can work. I think, you know, that's really where the magic and trust happens. But a lot of government folks are very hesitant to open up and talk about, you know, what they wish could happen or what they would like to see done better, or, you know, how things can be improved. They're, you know, a lot of them are scared to talk to industry. And, you know, frankly, sometimes industry is a little nervous to talk to the government as well. So, you know, I think if we all just kind of take our, you know, coats off and just look at each other as people and teammates, I think we could probably get a whole lot more accomplished.
You know, it's so funny. I consider myself like driven, outgoing, but I get so nervous in calling the government. I have to be pushed. So I have a mentor who was former government, and she's always like, just call them. And so I can't have a follow-up meeting with her where I didn't do the thing. So now I I am just getting way more comfortable. And you know what my thought is when I call them? They're just people. They're people. And then half the time, actually, their job is to help you or give you these answers or have these discussions actually with you, because that will end up shaping a better outcome for everybody. But I have this intimidation too. And I think it's funny because for so many years, I sat literally right next to government people as a contractor and knew that they were people, but there was something about, okay, now I'm officially on this other side and I'm calling you and you are government. You are the government, but they're just people.
They're just people. And I'm pretty sure they're all watching Netflix at night too, once their kids go to bed, or, you know, Monday night football.
What is one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I wish I would have not been so shy. I love observing, and sometimes I can get into like a little introverted, but I wish I advocated for myself a little bit more. And I think that, you know, that comes with age, but there's so many talented young people out there who are really, you know, a lot smarter where they were today than I was at their age. And, you know, I wish people advocated for themselves a lot more, because then you can see how great, you know, the really person is. Sometimes people miss it in their daily busy lives.
You're clearly a huge reader. Is there a book that you just insist everyone read?
So there's two things that I always enjoy. A really great, funny story. I love reading like biographies of comedians. You know,
oh, yeah.
I love that. I always have to end my day on something funny before I fall asleep. It's always like, I got to do something. End on a good note. And then right now I'm kind of bouncing between Bob Iger's book, A Ride of the Lifetime. He and the Disney brand are quite fascinating to me for many years, how you can M&A different brands and incorporate them into your super behemoth, well-known product.
Right.
Not lose, you know, the magic that made them. And then I'm reading the Trevor Noah book. I just started that.
Oh, is it the Born a Crime?
Yes, Born a Crime.
That is one of the best books I've ever read. It is so unbelievably good. And it is so fascinating. So he describes apartheid as someone who has lived through it and seen both sides of it. And then he describes himself growing up. But the trick of the book is it's really an ode to his mother. So he has this really amazing mother. And I think you're going to really love that book. Now, what comedian did you read that you really enjoyed recently?
I really enjoyed Tiffany Haddish's book.
Oh, yes. Yes. We were just talking about that. And the first part about why she calls herself the Black Unicorn.
Yes, I couldn't stop rolling on the floor for that book. Yeah, that's pretty much what I enjoy reading. So I have a wish list that hopefully Santa Claus will get me.
What's on it?
So the new Barack Obama book, I'm interested in reading. The John Lewis biography, I'm interested in reading. And there is a book on the Crusades that I would like to read.
How many books do you go through a week? Like, how many books do you think you finish a year?
I pretty much go between like 20 to 30.
And do you keep all the books after you read them, or do you give them away? Like, do you have this massive growing bookshelf at your house?
I do have a lot of books at my house. But, if I find somebody who's interested in the book, I'm a minimalist. So if I can expunge these books, then I will pass them on. If not, usually February, I do a giant dump to the local public library, and hopefully they can use them.
My company, Nyla, has a book club because I'm a really big reader as well. I've actually been running a book club for about 10 years. They found the Tiffany Haddish book sad because she did have to overcome so much in her life to get to where she is. But the Nyla book club, I think we're picking Delivery Happiness. And I picked it right before Tony Heish passed away. But I thought it would be interesting. At Nyla, we're very focused on experience, both employee experience with the company. So how are we treating them? How are our engagements with them? And then customer experience, how we're engaging with the government. And then fundamentally, I think one of our distinguishers is Nyla is really focused on building systems that work and work extremely well. And you have to be ruthlessly focused on either the end user or if it's a system-to-system integration. But I think one of the comparisons is that a lot of companies can say that they're technical, but they don't have that focus on whether it's ever actually used, right? That it ends up being shelfware or it's a prototype that didn't consider the evolution. Now, before we go, what advice do you have for young people today? So people who are like you graduating with a degree, they're not quite sure what they're going to do. What advice outside of being a better advocate would you say?
I would say the two things would be use your network. Talk to your other friends, friends who are doing internships, parents, friends that you've known for a while, and to say, this is what I'm interested. This is what I have a degree in. Do you know anybody? Do you know anything? How do I get into this field? And then don't be afraid to fail and try something completely different, because you really got to push yourself beyond your comfort zone and try something new, because you never know that whatever you try, it may be like the best thing that ever happened that you never thought about.
I think it's humbling to go around and be like, I need a job. I don't know what I'm doing. And it's hard to kind of be that humbled. I know when I started my business, because I was like, well, I am such a fabulous engineer and my customers love me and people say they'll join me. But in the beginning, I had to eat a lot of shit. Like, you had to take what you can get. And I didn't know a lot of things. I didn't know actually how to run a business at all. And it was very humbling just going around. And the information I needed about how to start a government contractor is not available on the internet. And it was really hard. And it's very humbling. But I think you're right. If you can get past asking, it's worth it.
The asking is hard because you really... you're putting yourself like completely out there. It's like, will you go to the prom with me? But like 90,000 times. Right. And you know, if you don't have a much of a network, and I think that's okay too. Use what you have and say, you know, this is where I want to go. This is my focus, or this is what I think I want to do when I grow up. Talk to anybody and don't be afraid to really put yourself out there. I think those are the biggest things. Especially, I think, as women, as girls, we're not taught to push ourselves so publicly out there, you know, and I think that's a lot that has to be changed. I think if we could all do that, it'd be a better place.
Well, Alexis, I want to thank you so much. And I appreciate that you took the intro from Aisha and that I've gotten to get to work with you. And I look forward to our partnerships together. And thank you for telling your story today. It's really interesting.
No, thank you so much for having us on. I enjoy working with you too. And I know my coworkers do as well. So there's a lot of exciting things that can happen when we empower others.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. Please be sure to share it with friends and family. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn under the Outspoken Podcast. Thanks again, and chin up, heads up, eyes forward.